Hello and welcome to First 7-Inch Club, episode 61. First 7-Inch Club is a podcast where we dig up a 7-inch by a forgotten or obscure band within the realms of hardcore punk or metal and discuss whether or not they're worth being remembered. We also provide factoids and trivia that we get from the internet and our own personal experiences. Although we don't consider ourselves know-it-alls or experts, many other people do. Sometimes we make mistakes as we are only getting information that we see on the internet, the fake news internet. And we also try and avoid personally asking people in the band, even when we can. So sometimes we get stuff wrong. You have to deal with it. I am Mike, and with me is Scott.
Mike, you're slightly closer to the seedy underworld of illicit substances than me, I think. Mm-hmm. Are you aware of people using the term McSpoon as a unit of measure for drugs?
No.
I mean, this is probably before your time, I guess, but they certainly make it seem like it was going on for a while. But someone posted, I think on Thrift Store Jobber, posted in the Discord an article about this, that back in the 70s, Nixon began the war on drugs, and there was like a hearing where all like a lobbyist of like the bong manufacturers and stuff, like paraphernalia manufacturers, got to state their case. And one guy was like, hey, you want the best Coke spoon in town? You just got to go to McDonald's. It comes free with every cup of coffee. And, you know, he meant that as like a redirection, you know, like, you know, banning bongs and stuff isn't the answer because you can just get it at McDonald's. But like a parent lobbyist group where they were like, holy shit. And they went to McDonald's and demanded that they stop giving out Coke spoons, and it worked.
Yep.
So like 1979, those spoons are gone. But
no, it was way longer than that. I remember that when I was a kid.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
This thing says that they were done by 79 and that they'd converted to this paddle, like a little flat paddle. But I totally remember these things.
Yes.
It's the coolest item that I think any fast food company has ever given out. It's like a long, skinny handle with a 3D McDonald's logo on it, and then a perfect, teeny tiny little spoon at one end.
Yeah.
It was definitely after the 70s.
Yeah. A lot of things moved slowly back then. It's possible they stopped producing them in 1979. It's also possible they had 8 years worth point.
The article says they did have a huge stock and they just sent them overseas. And no. They stopped giving them out here. And then overseas, it became like a bonanza of people doing more drugs because of the Coke spoons. So they had to start putting out the paddles over there, too. I don't believe any of that. I definitely remember these things. I remember like having them around, and they were like, you know, when you're a little kid, you pick up any little toy and hang on to it or whatever. And it's like a real shame that the narcs went after this thing. It's like a beautiful little artifact that eventually they just replaced with the straw, like the plastic crappy straw that doesn't stir anything.
There goes our warning, our little disclaimer at the beginning of the show. The fake internet, the fake news media is reporting fake news from the 70s. Even Burger King might have had one. I remember because they, like, we called them Coke spoons because we were just like, this is for Coke. Because, I mean, now we're too little to do Coke, but that's what everybody knew them as, so.
Yeah, you got to be at least 8 or 9 till you get
started doing. Yeah.
So on the subject of destruction and substances, listener Alex, I think he's a listener. I don't know if he is anymore. AKA Tower Skin online. Yeah. He posted a movie, and I don't know if he made it or just retweeted it, but it's a movie that recreates 9/11 using hundreds of cigarette packs. Hmm. He built the Twin Towers in a non-trivial size, like a part of a living room. He built two twin towers out of cigarette packs. Huh. Correct me if I'm wrong, but cigarettes are still expensive, right?
Yes.
So this 2-minute movie is officially the most expensive short film I've ever seen in my life. It's like Avatar budget.
They're probably empty packs of cigarettes. He's probably saving them.
How would you stack an empty soft pack? They're stacked.
Oh, I don't know then. Maybe they are full then. I don't know.
No, he just has $42,000 worth of cigarettes in his living room, and he just threw stuffed animals at it. Mm-hmm. So hats off to that. I got an email at the Border Boss account, and that's pretty infrequent. I don't really check it even that much anymore because it never doesn't get a lot of traffic. But a listener, Pierce, from the old days, emailed us, and he just wanted you to know, Mike, that he also can't stand Bruce Springsteen. I don't remember what context that is. I don't remember what we said.
I told my Bruce Springsteen story about my girlfriend exposing Bruce for being a fucking bourgeois piece of shit that has to talk through an assistant to talk to the common people at retail stores.
Mr. Pierce also says Bruce Springsteen fucking sucks, and he calls him a pile of inhuman waste. So that's, you guys, true. Share this.
Yep.
I mean, you know, he wrote Blinded by the Light, which eventually became the most perfect song in the universe after it fell into Manfred Mann's hands. So I can't get into this. I can't get into this battle because that's the best song in the world. We have some emails to talk about, I guess. I'll just knock this one out because it's like several weeks old. Listener Ed wrote into us because, you know, I asked the unyielding silent wall of our audience for some stories about countercultural parenting, like whether you're raised by like immature pop culture parents, or if you are an immature pop culture parent or whatever. And he roasted the challenge to tell me that he's a Warhammer dad with, like, you know, lots of little metal toys around the house. And he also has long hair and tattoos, and his 12-year-old daughter could not give a shit. She doesn't give one shit about it. He does, like, whether he's listening to doom metal or synth pop, everything he does is stupid. And I found this is also true of a 5-year-old daughter. She doesn't, my child has no time for anything. Anything that's dear to me is bullshit to her. But he does say his 9-year-old son is different, that he likes all this stuff. I think that's the truth of it. That's, we can all bristle against these assigned gender stereotypes. Sometimes it just shakes out.
Yep.
More importantly than that, he didn't stop there, because a few weeks later, I also asked for people to give me stories of what it's like when wild frontman bands, crazy frontmen have an off day, and nobody really gave me any stories. But Ed said that he lives in Pensacola, Florida, which is between bigger markets. So they get bands coming through to like pick up a little gas money at a small venue before playing better shows elsewhere, which is kind of like Albany. That's actually quite a bit like living in Albany. And he says in 90 or 91, Jesus Lizard came through and they ended up on a bill that sold about 0 tickets and they were playing to the opening bands. And David Yao just walked over to the bar mid set, grabbed the phone, sat down on stage and ordered a pizza.
Wow.
To the stage. Yeah. And and snoozed his way through the rest of the set.
That's amazing.
So, all I want in my life is more stories like this. So if you live in a flyover state or a refueling town and, like, you know, Bad Luck 13 came and played a Bad War Pigs cover and left or something, I want to know all about that. So send those in as fast as you can.
Yes. That's awful. Send more in to first7inchclub@gmail.com. That's all letters there. I don't have much. We've been gone for 2 weeks, but I wasn't like banking anything. And I think I got secret COVID where I just got the part where my brain is foggy. I haven't been able to like retain creative thoughts for the past week. So, I have a couple emails, but one's not really an email, just something I have to talk about. And the other one's an actual email. But, the first thing is, of course, to get out of the way, the holidays, the national holidays for September. Oh, shit, I almost did Monday again. It's September 14th. There's some good ones for Monday too. Like,
do them.
It's National Police Woman Day today, Monday, September 12th. It's also National Boss Employee Exchange Day, where you switch spots with your boss.
Oh, fuck yeah. Yeah. I want to do that.
The only other real good one is it's Busy Bones' birthday.
Happy birthday, well, Busy Bones.
Harmony, yeah. It sucked because while we were gone, I don't remember what day it is, and it's because your phone listens to everything you say. So now I'm getting like all these holidays just zapped into my phone, and there is the fakest one ever. I can't remember if it was cat or just pet, but I got an ad for, I don't know if you get them, because all I look at on the internet is cat videos. So I get a lot of, and I just look for cat products because I buy my cats a lot of products. And I always get it for the 23andMe, but for cats. Like, what kind of fucking weirdo is doing that shit? Like, what are you going to find out about your cat? Come on. It's bad enough if people do it, but, like, what are you going to... Like, are you that into cats that you need to know its breed? Come on, whatever. But I always get the ads for it, and one of them said, it's National Cat DNA Day today. And I was like, I think you made that up. I don't think anybody celebrates that except you weird company that takes cat DNA and, tells people that it's some weird breed of cat.
It's hard some cat DNA'd.
Yeah.
Fucking gross.
Okay, so today, or when you're listening to this, Wednesday, September 14th, it is Gobstopper Day. So I eat some Gobstoppers today.
Hell yeah.
National Coloring Day. I've seen a lot of adult coloring book talk pop up lately. There's much more creative things you can do than color in coloring books. Don't take that away from the kids. I don't even think kids want to color in books anymore, so just let it die. I'm gonna try and celebrate this as much as I can on Wednesday. National Eat a Hoagie Day. I love that. I love hoagies. I just watched the Food That Built America episode about the Subway and Blimpy rivalry. So I'm all sandwiched up right now.
What's your natural word for it?
For a hoagie? For a cold one, a sub. For a hot one, a grinder.
I think it's just subs for me across the board.
Yeah, I didn't realize that people just call them only subs until I moved to Albany, because it's I was in that weird spot of Connecticut that shares with like Massachusetts, and so for some reason Michigan, where they call them hot subs grinders. So I just grew up calling them grinder.
And I call them a wedge once in a while, because that came from a friend from Brooklyn. He naturally calls them all wedges. I like that word. That's a good word.
Piggybacking on National Eat a Hoagie Day, it's also National Food is Medicine Day. Mm-hmm. National Noel Day. That's a name. So if your name is Noel or Noel, I guess Noel. I guess Noel doesn't count. I don't know if you pronounce that. And O-E-L, I don't know if you pronounce it both ways, but it's your day today, Noel. Yeah. It's also National Sober Day. That's some straight edge shit, I guess. Okay, and National Virginia Day. If you're in Virginia, it's your day. Also, Amy Winehouse's birthday. I don't think she'll be celebrating that one.
Rest in peace.
She's in heaven. But those are the holidays for Wednesday, September 14th. So a couple of emails just to go over. So we got another email from the one Terry Riggs, fake name. This is the guy or person, I don't know, I assume it's a guy, that sent us the Grudge Match 7-inch about a year ago. I don't even know. I don't know if he was cryptic enough to make sure they were a year apart or what. I don't think so. I don't think the time lines up. It was about 9 months ago. He has bombarded our email inbox with another record, and I was like, oh man, this is like the second annual Terry Riggs record challenge. If you guys don't remember, he sent us the Grudge Match record, which was a Cleveland band. It was a very popular episode. So he sent another Cleveland band called Outcry from 1999 on Clenched Fist Records, their EP Hope for the Torn Heart. And I was like, yeah, we'll definitely do it, because, you know, it was the Grudge Match was such a hit. So this should be no problem. And then I noticed, plus he sent him an MP3 this time. Last time it was some cryptic, archaic, antiquated file format that doesn't even exist anymore. And I had to like decode it with some like prehistoric software just to get the MP3 to work. But this time he sent actual MP3s in two different emails, but he sent MP3s this time. So that was cool. And I was like, oh, perfect, we'll do this. And then I went to the Discogs page and I realized this was a CD only. This is a CD EP. So I don't know. I know we have several Cleveland listeners and people that were from Cleveland. So this is up to you guys. You guys, Jonah, Doan, everybody else that's out there that was in the core scene in the late 90s, early 2000s, let us know if this is going to be worth our time to really break the rules and do a CD EP that someone sent in with no other info. Maybe we could just do it as a mini episode or something. I'd like tacked onto a different episode, but yeah. You people out there, let us know if Outcry is worth going over.
Do your people consider a CD to be a 7-inch? Yeah.
So we'll see if we really need to stretch the rules real bad for this one, or we could stick it in to a different episode. We got an email from Nick, listener Nick. He sent us a scene report, which I know to be another podcast kind of gimmick. So sorry we're infringing on your gimmick, but there's nothing we can do about it. If anybody else has any notable scene reports, please email them to first7inchclub@gmail.com, and I will read them.
Especially if your scene is lame. Like, if you live in a lame scene, I really want to hear about that.
Yeah, let us know about the shittiest local bands and why you're going to their shows and how sad it is and how many times the guitarist's strings broke and how many times they had to start over songs and shit like that.
Wait. Start over.
If you go to a show where bands have to start over songs more than once, I want to know about it. You write in and let me know, and I'll put them on blast. I'll give out their band camp and have hate mail sent to them. He says, hey, boys, love the pod, even though my hardcore knowledge is very lacking, but wanted to give you a Meltzer-style report on the hardcore show that took place at a Sonic in southern New Jersey this Saturday night. This was actually last weekend. For those of you not in the wrestling world, Dave Meltzer is like the number one newsman in wrestling. He has all the scoops. He's his star ratings are very coveted, so on and so forth. Figured that hardcore fast food crossover would be appreciated. The show is headlined by Jell, who absolutely rip. Went to the show hoping it would be a recreation of the famous Denny's show, but it actually turned out much better. I, an idiot, thought the show would be inside, which is crazy to me, because I've only been to Sonic like four times, but it seems like the forbidden zone. I don't think anybody could go in there.
It's very small inside.
Yeah, it looks super tiny too, so it would have been really weird if it was in there. My girlfriend, who was much smarter, knew it would be in the parking lot next to one of the drive-in stalls. Opener was a band called Phantom, who doesn't have an Instagram presence, yet they were the only band my camera had battery for. Great frontman, 3.75 out of 5 stars. Great way to get the crowd moving. Next was Chemical Fix out of Philly, who absolutely murdered it. Every time I've seen them, they murdered it, except this time people started throwing firecrackers and bottle rockets in the pit. That's one of Scott's favorite moves, I guarantee it. That was a new one for me, 4.75 out of 5 stars. Don't bring your fire kinks to the pit. Thank you kindly. Then was Exhibition from Buffalo. Pretty standard, brought a bit of skinhead element, but not the bad skins, thankfully. The crowd was into it, but they didn't do much for me. 3 out of 5 stars. Scowl from California then came out for an unannounced guest set, and they tore the non-existent roof off the Sonic parking lot. 4 out of 5 stars. They played a very short set, but it was a nice appetizer for the headliner. Finally, Gel came on, and it was insanity and everything a hardcore fan would want it. In 2022, 5 out of 5 stars. Would have been 6 stars in the Tokyo Dome. That's another wrestling joke. I've attached some photos and videos for your viewing pleasure. Also, Mike, fucking love Pain Pigs. I'm not on Discord, so I don't know if you've done any since the last one on Twitch that got nuked, but I hope someday they come back. Best, Nick. About Pain Pigs. Pain Pigs is a wrestling mixtape I was making during the pandemic and broadcasting over Twitch, and then the world kind of just pretended the pandemic stopped existing and we went back to work and I don't have time to do it anymore. But you're in luck, Nick. I haven't made a new one, but if you're familiar with Baked is a an underground streaming service that you can find at baked.live. There's a whole Pain Pigs channel there where Pain Pigs running 24/7 every day, 365 days a year. You can watch Pain Pigs. You could just fall asleep to it. So go baked.live, and then type in VRTL Pros at the top in the channel section, and it'll pop up. Or I think you could even go to baked.live/VRTL Pros, and the channel will pop right up, and you can just watch Pain Pigs for the rest of your life. But yeah, about this show, it's weird because in the beginning, Nick says he doesn't know much about hardcore, but then he just knows all these bands. So I think you're lying, Nick. I think you
Yeah, seems pretty well acquainted with hardcore.
I think you know a lot about hardcore. I looked at Nick's pictures, and I also looked at some other photos on the internet, and there was a fucking shit ton of people at this show because obviously it's at a Sonic. It's kind of gimmicky, so that's cool. This Gel band, I don't hate them, but Nick's giving them 5 out of 5. I just don't understand it. I don't get it. A lot of people love them. They have like a new split that I think is pretty good, but before that, it's just kind of like, it's kind of just a band to me, but maybe I'm just old and grumpy, but whatever. I'm glad somebody that actually listened to the show went to that show, or because I was very, it was one of the only hardcore shows that happened that I was intrigued by. So I'm glad it was fun and firecrackers were being thrown off and all that other stuff.
Like, I only saw the one quick, I know he sent us a bunch of videos. Yeah. I didn't look at those yet, but I saw the video someone posted on Twitter, and like, there's people sitting, it looks like some sort of Mad Max world where they like brought vehicles and surrounded the parking lot, and they're like, and they're shooting fireworks into the sky while the pit is taking place. It looks pretty good to me. I would bend the rules on fireworks for what they're doing. It looks fucking apocalyptic, and it looks really good. I think that if you're gonna do it outside, I don't really care what you do. I mean, I like fireworks indoors. I don't think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
But I'm shooting them off in the sky while a band plays. It's pretty awesome. I feel like to be a real hater of ages to not like what I saw in that video.
So there you go. That's our first scene report, hopefully of many. Hopefully we just become the new scene report podcast where people can tell us all the bad shows they go to. Bad shows only. Either legendary epic shows or bad shows. Bad shows only. Tell us how the singer shit his pants while he's singing.
I'm really curious about the logistics of that show. Like, did they just show up with gear and set up and hope the cops didn't come, or did they get permission?
There had to be permission because it was advertised, like the Sonic parking lot. And, you know, I think if a cop, like if anybody drove by that and saw that, they would probably freak out. So yeah.
Wow, there's an octagon battle going in this parking lot.
Yeah, so they had to have some kind of security or at least notice or a permit or something. But yeah. So today we are talking about a band called Knotwork from Philadelphia. That's it's K-N-O-T knot, like the knot that you tie, Knotwork. They existed from around 1995 to about 1995, I guess, 94 to 95 maybe. So this is kind of a special request almost, 93 to 95, sorry. But it's in the 40s, I believe, maybe the early 50s, we talked about a band called I Hate You. Mm-hmm. And they spoiler alert, one of the guys from I Hate You is in Not Work, and he started I Hate You Instagram account started following us on Instagram, and he messaged me and said, "Hey, do you want the Not Work 7-inch?" And I said, "Yes, I would like that, because I had it on the want list, and it's not a cheap 7-inch, and I was never going to buy it." So I was like, "Oh yeah, sweet, that's cool." And he didn't explicitly say, "I want you to review this on the show or talk about it." So I don't know. I mentioned it. I was like, "Oh yeah, I want to do that on the show." So yeah, he was nice enough to send me this collector priced 7-inch, and I was expecting to get like some beat up version that he had laying around for the past 25 years. Mm-hmm. But no, it's pristine. It's like it just came out of the fucking the 7-inch box. It's in perfect mint condition. Never played. I don't know how many of these he's sitting on. It seems like I think he had some on eBay too. So I don't know. It's he must have had some left over. And so he sent it to me, and that's pretty cool. It's pretty cool that somebody was like, "Yeah, I'll send you this 7-inch for free," because it costs money to send shit, and it's He could have sold this for 15-20 bucks on eBay.
I was expecting you to open the package and get a punch.
Yeah,
fist is gonna fly right out of the package and knock you flat.
I was like, there's definitely a chance he might just be sending me dog shit or something like that. And it's okay. We like I Hate You enough, but. I've been deserving it my whole life. Somebody sent me dog shit. I've talked a lot of shit on the internet, a lot of shit publicly. So, one of these days it'll come back to me. But no, he sincerely sent the 7-inch. So that was pretty cool. But yeah, so we'll get into the band. That was John from Not Work / I Hate You, by the way. So thank you, John. I don't know if you actually listen or you just wanted to kindly send us a 7-inch, but, it was very welcome for you to send us a 7-inch. So as I said, this 7-inch is self-titled. It came out in 1995. Not Work is from Philadelphia. They seemed to just put out a 7-inch and a demo and called it quits. And much like I Hate You, they seem to have a zine attached to the band, too. I don't know if that was John's doing in I Hate You and Not Work, but that seems to fall in line that both bands had a 7-inch or a 7-inch and zine companion. So they had a couple issues of a zine called Not Work. And then the 7-inch, and that seemed to be it. Oh, and this was also on Kids Dream Records, which we'll get into, because it was Kids Dream release number 3, and I had a very hard time finding any other info on Kids Dream 1 or 2, so I guess we'll talk about that later. But to get into the actual band members, and again, I'm not positive who played what in this band, so I have kind of like possible answers, but John, as I said, John Pepe from I Hate You. He was, oh yeah, it's, I had in my old notes that he wrote the zine. So yeah, he definitely did the Not Work zine too. I'm assuming he played guitar in Not Work, but I'm not positive.
I think he's a singer, because I found a live video and it looks like him on vocals.
Okay. So maybe he's a singer. That solves a lot of problems then. But I didn't write anything new about him. If you really want to learn more about John himself, I'm sure we doxed him pretty well on the I Hate You episode. So there's that. Bo Brandley, is possible bassist or guitarist. This is a little small world type of thing. He was in Kill the Man Who Questions. He was also in Rambo, which is probably a little polarizing band because they're like a wacky, thrashy grind band sort of thing. That was kind of wacky. But he's also in a band called Cross Keys, who was a newer band, which was that guy Dave from, I don't know how to say his last name, from Lifetime and Kid Dynamite. But Cross Keys is also this guy, Josh Alvarez, in Cross Keys, who does a podcast called Cinepunks that I was on a couple months ago. Yeah, right. he does Cinepunks with Liam, and I was on there talking about God of Cookery, and so go check that out in the Black Tavern. So if you like those movies, or if you like movies in general, check out Cinepunks, because it's a movie podcast, and it's tolerable. I mean, you know, that means it's good, because, it's hard to even hear like a tolerable movie podcast these days. Yeah. So there's just tolerable and not tolerable to me. It's one of the good ones. It's one of the 1 out of 10,000 that's tolerable. So go there. You can listen to about kind of cultish movies, kind of under the radar movies. Sometimes they talk about big mainstream movies too, but it's a good time. And it's Josh from Cross Keys, who's in a band with the guy from Not Work. It's small world shit. So check that out.
Part of our extended universe, you're obligated to check it out.
Yes, yeah, so go check out Cinepunks. That's Punks with an X, the way it's supposed to be. Steve Farrell, who I again assumed played bass or guitar, could be wrong, and he was in the actual Kid Dynamite for a little while, He played bass in Kid Dynamite on Kid Dynamite's debut LP, which is I count as the greatest melodic hardcore record of all time. So so this is pretty big stuff. So it's a pretty big pedigree as far as I'm concerned. The last guy is what, Vince Maskey? Maxey?
Yeah, Maskey, yeah.
Vince Maskey. Could not find a damn fucking thing about this guy. The internet is just blank. I even tried Scott's trick of putting in like Vincent or Vinny and typing different things, but Knotwork has a Facebook page and it's spelled Maskey there, so I don't think this was a typo or anything.
Right, yeah.
I think this dude's name is really Vince Maskey, and I think he just dipped off the face of the earth once the internet became a thing, so I couldn't find anything about him. So I also forgot to mention that Bo is he's a real ass doctor too. So he's a accomplished man. So but yeah, that's about it. That's all the doxing I did. Hopefully Scott could shed some light on Vince. Probably not though. Let's see.
No, not really. So yeah, Bo has the biggest resume and he's still active. Even as a doctor, he's still active in the scene. He was in The Curse, who I dislike. He was in Rambo, who I dislike. He was in Cross Keys, who I kind of, they're like a music I should like, but I just haven't listened to them that much.
Cross Keys is not music you would like, Scott. I don't know who told you.
Well, maybe I'm thinking someone else. Yeah. Like, no, because Cross Keys, it's kind of like Midwest emo stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, sort of. It's like punky. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, so like 20 years ago, I probably would have tried. And maybe failed.
Okay.
Kill the Man Who Questions has first 7-inch club crossover because there's members of Limp Wrist have crossed through that band. First degree acquaintances of first 7-inch club. We can't get away from our gene pool, no matter what we do. But yeah, so you can clearly see that he's a man of energy. His main image on Discogs, he has infinite energy. You can see it right in his picture, and he used that to get lots of degrees, and he's a doctor now. But let's take a closer look, Mike. His degrees come from a school of osteopathic medicine. And I didn't really know that there was a difference here. So there's allopathic and osteopathic. Most of the doctors you've dealt with are probably allopathic. Osteopathic are like holistic doctors, and it's not fake. It's not, I'm not saying he's fake or anything like that, but they believe in a holistic approach, of the mind, the body, and the spirit. They think they're all interlinked and you have to heal them all. So Bo's branch of medicine believes in ghosts and heals ghosts. John Pepe, we discussed in episode 45. I could be wrong about this, but I think he beefed up some of his internet presence.
Yeah.
I think I would have discussed the crazy intro of his LinkedIn where he says, sharing knowledge helps you achieve mortality.
And well, he's probably at that age. We're all just dwelling on death every day.
Yeah. We're all going to achieve mortality. Like you can't do anything about that. That's coming at you no matter what. But I love it, Mike. I love people discussing the chill of death in an unlikely context, like starting off your resume. My resume is going to be like, you know, it's going to have some memento moris right at the top of top of the page. The reason I want to work for you is because death is coming for me. His chilly hand is always on my shoulder.
I need to work before I die.
I need to work. That's the whole fucking resume. I need to work before I die. Everything I do is a reminder of death's embrace, and I need to work for you. But I think he updated it because it looks like there's a bunch more stuff. And I think he's like, man, I really fucked up because my guys at First 7-inch Club looked me up and I didn't have any info out there. I better put some meat on the bone for future podcasters. And he is the guy who maintains all traces of these bands, Knotwork and I Hate You. He's the guy who's keeping the flame alive. He keeps a Facebook page up that he actually updates every once in a while. And he has an old flyer up there that we could almost call the first 7-inch Club Fest because it's got Devoid of Faith, Monster X, Dissolve, Human Reigns, 97A, Bleed, and all of his bands. For him, I guess making the zine was kind of like when you get the Instagram page now. Like you start a band, you grab the Twitter account and the Instagram, and he's just like, I better start making a zine. I got a new band. I got to make a zine. And he has to sort of figure out what the lane is. And Knotwork's lane seems to be very sincere, straight edge zinery. It doesn't look funny or anything. It looks like it's just a sincere hardcore zine about, you know, what it means to be straight edge, including drawings of cool militant straight edge cartoon guys with huge sneakers and X's on their hands, which is one of my favorite genres. Steve Farrell, it seems like he kind of dipped out of music after Kid Dynamite, and now he's a DJ who spins like soul and jazz records, mostly 45s.
That's a common path. If you're not going to become a BJJ dad, you might as well become a DJ into soul music.
DJ dad.
I collect soul records. That was my path, so I understand it.
So welcome to the literal first 7-inch club, Steve. You are literally spinning the first 7 inches. So, and I think judging from a live video I saw, I think John's the singer, Steve's the bassist, Bo's the guitarist. And Vince Maskey, same thing. I couldn't find anything. And even if you type in his name, Google's like, are you sure you don't mean Mackey? Let me show you a bunch of Vince Mackeys. I got plenty of Vince Mackeys for you. I couldn't find anything meaningful. I found one of those like Russian band pages, like the Russian Discogs or, you know, whatever that once you translate it, they almost always have something. They have nothing. They didn't even bother. They just, they didn't even bother chasing, you know, quote unquote, Vince Maskey, if that's your real name. So I think he might be a hoax, that he's in the video, I assume. There's a person there holding down his spot.
You didn't do any. You didn't do any of your deep Facebook doxing?
I couldn't find anything. Nothing. There's nothing about the name Maskey that connects to this guy.
You didn't check their friends. You didn't check who's following I Hate You or anything.
I went to Upper Darby in my car and I went door to door. Have you seen this guy? No.
Wow. Well, there you go, Vince Maskey, the first person to elude the first 7-inch club.
Totally.
I think there's one other person too, but yeah, you're really in a small group of real privileged people. Yeah, you are literally off the grid. So that's what you wanted in your life, Vince. You achieved it. You are off the grid. So as I said, this was on a record label called Kids Dream Records, which I assume was one of these guys in the band. Again, probably John. That was their record label. And unless Scott found something, I think they had lofty goals of this would be their third release, but I feel like this is their only release because I couldn't find anything. Kids Dream is not really like, you know, it's not like a unique phrase, so maybe it's something buried like the Terror Cake record label was like, I remember that dude contacted us. He was like, oh, there was these other, or no, you found them. You found their other releases, but yeah. So did you find anything on Kids Dream, Scott?
The only thing I found is that your record is different from the Discogs one. I don't know if you noticed that. So if you zoom in on the record cover and Discogs, there's a Kids Dream different logo just stamped right onto the cardboard.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it has the band's address as a label. So I assume Kids Dream is just John. It seems to be John's address that's listed on the inside. So I don't know what one and two were, but I think he made the label to put his own bands as far as I could tell.
Okay, wait. So yeah, this okay. No, that's a different. Wait, is this a different one too? Because there's a couple. Oh no. Okay, yeah. So the third version. Okay, this makes a lot more sense then. This makes a lot more sense when we get into the layout because I had some stuff I wanted to go over in the layout. Okay, so that makes sense. So yeah, we could do that now. We get this record onto a tray. Nice. So yeah, one of my main things about the label or the packaging. Was just answered when I looked at this Discogs because see, look at this. I can't really tell the color. I think it's like a fuchsia. I don't know. It's pinkish brown. I don't know what this is. It's an odd color, and it's and then the other stuff is in a kind of a stale dried piss yellow. so it's a great color combo. And what I noticed when I was looking at this is it's meant to look like the front and back cover are meant to look like a scrapbook, like somebody pasted shit onto a piece of paper and that's what you get. And my copy is definitely not that. It's definitely something that was already laid out either with a computer or something. But now that I looked, the first press is definitely, when you look at the Discogs version, that is definitely cut and pasted because it's gross looking.
Yeah,
there's shadows, there's fucking creases and shit,
staples.
So, yeah,
visible staples. Yeah,
yeah. So I don't know how does it say. Yeah, it doesn't say it. So I have no idea how many of the original version was pressed. Mm-hmm. But I have the mass produced version then. So I guess it's, but it, let me see.
It says from the original pressing of 500, but with new non DIY covers and inserts on Discogs. So the original was 500.
Yeah. Okay, so he must have made these like later on in life then, because that was my big concern, because I was like, this is definitely not actually cut and paste, but there's like jagged shapes on this, and I don't think there was software that could do that in 1995. So I was like, man, this dude probably had a computer like the size of a washing machine. replicating something he could have just made himself with some paper and some glue, but it turns out he probably made these later on in life when it was a lot easier to make jagged shapes and stuff on a computer. So that makes sense. But yeah, so the picture on the cover is a little boy and little girl from the waist down holding hands. It's very twee. Not Work is in a script font that I can't think of the name, but it's one of the first cursive typed fonts that came with computers. It's also italicized. I think it's usually not in italics, but this is also the font that if you have to electronically sign things, I think it's one of the choices. So I think my signature, my e-sign signature is in this font, actually.
Yeah.
It's in the Knotwork font. So
you got the same hand as Knotwork.
Yeah. On the back is like another scrapbook photo picture of what looks like a plane crashing. It's hard to tell. And then, you know, it has the names of the songs, and it has the little Kids Dream records with a little kind of like Shel Silverstein type of art, little logo thing going on. And, you know, if, I don't know if he made these much later, why he would keep his old, I guess maybe for authenticity, he kept his old address, or maybe he still lived there, yeah. I don't know. Yeah. But there's that. And inside is two inserts, not one, but two inserts, both on that stained, dried, pissed yellow type of color. When I took these out, one is like kind of chunky, one of the inserts is kind of chunky, the other one is a little thinner, but they're both the same length, so or height. So I was like, oh, this is probably just one sheet of paper that they got like two inserts out of. That's very economical. I like that. But then I put them together, and it's a little bigger than a sheet of paper. So this is just a weird coincidence that they just actually wasted a lot of paper to make these. But but one of the sheets is the lyrics, which we'll get to in a second. And the other one is like your little obligatory 90s kind of three-shot band photo. Thing, three panel band photo, and then Knotwork with a blurry photo on there. There's only three photos. There's four guys in this band, though, so one of these guys, a little left out.
Didn't make the cut.
Sorry.
Vince Maskey. They couldn't get a shot of Vince Maskey. Yeah. He doesn't exist.
Vince, because he doesn't exist. It's true. It says this record was recorded January 28th. Why me? These pictures were taken by Dominic Dingin, blah, blah, blah. All our thanks, blah, blah, blah. This is our dream. This is our music. Kids dream music. And there you go. Actually, no, I think this is a different, let me look again. No one cares about this. It is a different address. So he did update it with a new address. Okay. Mm-hmm. So about this Dominic, you get to the lyric sheet, and it has lyrics and has the little, again, these types of Shel Silverstein little images. I don't think it's actually Shel Silverstein, but when I think of kids art, that's all I think of. But at the bottom of the page, there's like a little blurb that says, there used to be a time when all was simple. We shared toys and had almost all the same tastes. We felt the same way about certain things, and we got along with each other. The harmony changed tune. We were no longer children, and I guess that meant we were no longer able to get along with each other. I'm so confused about all that sudden transition, but I do know that it shouldn't have happened this way. Signed, Dominic. There's no Dominic in the band. So it's just like, it was letting some dude right in your
buddy Dom.
Yeah. But then I looked, and there's a Dominic on I Hate You. So I assume it's the same Dominic. So I guess they're just fucking tight bros forever. And so that's cool that they transitioned. But I would not let my bro write some shit. And, but I guess he's a tight bro. Also, it's so like this little blurb kind of relates to a lot of the lyrics on this record, and it's like these dudes were what, like 18 at most, and it's just like, yeah, you really miss being 11, like it's like, yeah, it's weird, like the 18 is the best time of your life, bro. It wasn't when you're 11 or 9 or whatever. I don't know why you're wistful for 7 years ago when fucking shit sucked and you couldn't do anything by yourself, but whatever. It was back in the 90s. I think it was okay to have that attitude. Right now, I don't this might be even problematic. This might be a trigger warning in 2022 to be missing being a child so much. But this is something I would look at and I would know exactly what this is. This is very stereotypical looking to me, where I would just be like, and I mean at the time it wasn't stereotypical, but you look at it now and you're just like, yes, this is exactly what I expect it to be. It's very well done. I like that he went back and replicated it as best as he could, and yep, just didn't do the scrapbook shit over again. That's pretty cool. But yeah, it's a pretty good package overall.
This, you know, you kind of danced around it. This layout noodles around in an area of concern for me. It's always been a concern for me. Even when I was young and into these kind of bands, you know, hardcore bands fetishizing little kid stuff, like legit little kid situations.
Yeah.
And I say this as a person who dwells way too heavy in nostalgia. I'm like a nostalgia kind of person, but it makes me feel weird when hard bands are all about, like, you know, Skin Knees and Lightning Bugs and that kind of shit. But these guys, and especially when they're good at it, and these guys seem to be good, like, this is well done. Like, this is well done imagery. So that it's like, they're really in tune with that situation. But it makes me think of, like, this is like the world that like boomer memes fantasize about. You know, it's like
you're right.
It's always,
yes.
It's always summer. It's some vacant lot. Kids are playing with sticks, drinking from the hose.
Who remember? Who remember lemonade?
Who remember Country Time lemonade commercials? I mean, I haven't mentioned Captain Jazz in a few episodes. They're the Rembrandts of dwelling on very specific little kid stuff that made me feel kind of bad and uncomfortable when I was a fan. It's just a little too far for me. Like, I think about toys in my spare time, but I don't envision it actually being a little kid or doing any little kid things ever.
Yeah, now I'm like, it's awesome because I could buy whatever toy I want and do whatever I want with it. I don't want to be fucking 11 with that toy anymore.
I mean, the best you could say is you didn't really have to make too many decisions, and nothing that you did in a day would really have any impact.
So I got all these feelings out of me when I was about 13. I remember I remember being in bed one day and just like panicking that my life was over. Where I was like, "This is it, man! I'm fucking 13 years old. The next thing you know, I'll be 27 and I'll be dead." And that was it. And I got it all out of my system when I was 13. Yeah. I've been head on since then. So you are correct. It is very weird to go beyond age 13 with these feelings.
Yeah. Well, part of me also think, I mean, I don't want to put these guys on blast necessarily, but part of me also thinks it's a little disingenuous that you're, cause you, especially if you're a hard band, like these guys are pretty heavy.
Yeah.
And, to sort of contrast this little kid stuff with the heavy stuff is like overshooting the cute, the ironic cutesy thing a little bit too much. It's like you went a little bit too far. You said a little bit too much at the party and now everybody's looking at you funny. That's like how I feel about that. I think it's a cool layout. Like from apart from that, it's well done. I think those little illustrations in the middle, they're kind of like, they're a little bit creepy, but they're also, you know, pretty whimsical Winnie the Pooh type stuff or whatever.
I think that was like I said, I think it was in vogue back then. Not so much anymore. Yeah. Like I said, I think you would be put on a watch list if you saw like stuff about that now. But back then so it's hard to say if that was real true feelings for these dudes or if it was just like, well, that's what Captain Jazz did or whoever the fuck did. Like, it's hard to say. So because this is like, I was gonna get more into it when we're talking about the music, but this is kind of like, if I saw the lyrics, I'd be like, I would know exactly what it was, and I would just be like, okay, this is the type of emo that I like. And not because I was wistful for being a child, but it was just, you know, it was those tropes. I didn't know it was a trope at the time, but, you know, it was just like I knew what to expect when I saw shit like that, basically.
I think the only thing that kind of misses is the crappy, like, hardcore flyer that they included. Like the fact that the one side of that thing is really, really well thought out and even contains a poem from their buddy, and the other side is just the most bog standard hardcore band section thing that it almost seems like an afterthought. It's kind of funny that they...
It's definitely one of these things that I never really noticed until we started the show, because now that I get, you know, a fucking grip of these 7 inches at once and go through the layouts, and there's, I don't know, we've talked about 10 records with the same exact layout.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I mean, again, it's the 90s. You had limited resources, so I get it. But it's just so crazy how many of them used it. But yeah they should have just cut that out, put more Shel Silverstein shit in there, some more Dr. Seuss shit or whatever.
One thing we could do is stretch a photo and make it blurry. Put right our band name on top.
Okay, so now we can get into the music. This is only 3 tracks, but it is full, 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 full sound. Yeah, maybe this is a moment where you don't want full sound. When you hear 3 tracks, that's a lot of sound for 3 tracks. Mm-hmm. This tips in about 14 minutes. That's a lot of music. And there's only 1 track on side one. Yeah, so
mathematically, that tells you something. Dude,
something weird's going to go on here because that's it's a long first track. So the first track is called Distance. This is There's a lot of, I would say, a lot of sins on this record. A lot of rules being broken on this record. But yeah. This song features an intro to an intro, which is a, and you might even say there's three intros. So depending on how you count intros, but there's at least two. And I don't think you could do that. I don't think that's a thing you could do. Maybe live you get away with it, but I don't think you could put it on the record. You have to put intro, then distance. You can't just put distance and then do two intros. That's I can't imagine being in practice and being like, yeah, let's keep that second intro and that first intro.
Just keep playing, man. Just keep going.
But at the same time, that's another one of those kind of tropes that I liked about this strain of emo, which is just dicking around and on clean channels, just doing dicking around. That's why I like Rockets and Blue Lights from Albany. They're a big dicking around jam band. But they're a little different musically, but they did a lot of noodling, so I get it. This is the exact type of emo I would have liked in the 90s, which is basically meant just regular hardcore with no breakdowns. Not much emo to be had there. It's just clean. They place a little clean music and go right into a distortion. That was like, you would go, oh, they're an emo band back then, because they did clean music into distortion and then had no breakdowns. That makes you an emo band in 1995. So it makes sense. Typed something wrong. Auto-corrected to emojis for some reason. So this song is pretty lengthy with the two intros. It's pretty lengthy. It doesn't even really start kicking into their kind of normal, real, just kind of screamy type of fast hardcore until about 2 minutes, 2:45 in. And then when you think the song ends, it goes into a possible third or fourth intro. Three quarters of the way through the song, after they do play like a weird jam part, and then it goes into another intro, and this is unheard of. I think this is trolling at this point. I know these guys would, one of these guys and one of their bros would form the number one hardcore trolling band of all time, I Hate You, so maybe this was trolling. It's possible. Yeah. So another rule broken, a lot of drum clicks on this song. At least three times they do a drum count. I know technology was different back then, but I don't think I don't think you could do that. I don't even think you could do that live. I think that's what you can only do it twice. You could do it at the beginning of the song, and then when an epic part comes, you're allowed to do another drum count. But there's at least three, no epic parts, so it's another rule being broken. The core of this is a cool song that just needs to be heavily, heavily edited. I like the direction this is going, but I don't really love this song. It's just too much.
I think this intro is the most musical thing we've ever reviewed.
Yeah, like, it's very musical. Yeah, that's true. It's
really musical.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this could have been on like a Mogwai or a Tortoise album like 3 or 4 years later. Like, these guys predate that. You know, this could have been a whole song. Like, their intro could have been a whole Mogwai song.
Yeah.
This just kind of launches into Meryl territory. It's like kind of panicked. Hardcore sort of stuff, but I think it's its own thing. I think these guitars sound good. They sound heavy, at least on my earbuds. They sounded heavy. The drumming is really good. The mix is 90s, but it's not bad 90s. It's actually pretty good. It's pretty clear and pretty crisp. And these vocals are pretty unique. They kind of remind me of Scapegrace, because it's like they're trying to get on Ebullition, but it's not quite working out. So they're thinking maybe Bloodlink instead. Sounds like a lot of things, like without copying anything. I like that he's doing his own voice, that he's not trying to go, he's not trying to get the rasp that isn't there for him. If two minor complaints. One is that, as you said, this song has an ending. It has a pretty good ending. Like, the song kind of breaks apart and it's really cool and really well done. And then they do an encore, and you know, don't do that. Don't do an encore on your record. Make another track. Just make a grind track. Make a 1 minute grind track and fill that spot. And the other thing I wanted to deduct points for is all the talky parts. Record is filled with talking.
Yeah it is.
So I want to take some points off, but I will say he's one of the few singers I've seen so far who does it for a reason, because he saves a little gas, and then every bullshit talking part is followed immediately by the hardest scream on the record.
Yeah.
So I'm on the fence. But this whole song in total is 6+ minutes long of the most musical stuff we've heard so far in this whole podcast.
Yeah, I just need to edit it, or just, you know, whittle it down a little. But yeah, you are correct. It is musical. So side B, first track is called My Room. Yeah. So this is where the lyric nonsense. The first song is kind of like passable lyric wise, but this one is like about hiding under the covers. Like, I don't know, man. Yeah. That's I got over that much younger than 13. It's probably like
you remember too much. You guys are remembering way too much.
But whatever. Like I said, it's just like you go, oh yeah, this is emo music. That's all you need to do is say you need to hide under the covers, have real wimp lyrics.
This is emo music.
Yeah, I get it because he's a fucking child. This has you would otherwise not know this song was emo except in the beginning. They have a quick clean part and then it goes into distortion. So that's how you go. Oh, that and the hiding under the covers. You go, okay, yes, this is an emo song. Because otherwise, this is pretty much a kind of a just not like kind of a screamy hardcore song. Mm-hmm. This guy's doing some sort of singing voice that's not great, but I'm sure it's inspired by someone. I'm just going to say Dag Nasty and throw that out there. It's somebody, though, but he's trying for something. I'm not really into it, but it works with the song. But it's much different than just the talking from the screaming from the first track. Mm-hmm. The drummer really loves drum rolls. I don't know if there's another term for that when you do it in songs, but and so do I. So I don't mind it. I like that he's doing these drum rolls over and over and over again. Sounds cool. They make a lot out of very little lyrics in this song. You would think by the length of the song and how much this dude is singing that there was pages and pages of lyrics, but it's only about four or five sentences. And they really work it, and I admire that because I like using a little to make a lot. So yeah, this is a huge improvement after that first track. This has some direction. Might be a little tropey, but in 1995, I don't think it was that trite. So I'm a fan of this song outside of Hiding Under the Covers.
Hey guys, you can't fool me. I'm a music expert. And this is the same riff as the last song, just sped up. My hands are tied on this song a little bit because the singer decides to go for it, go for sing song, and for real, and he doesn't quite have the chops for it, no. But he is also on key. He's vaguely on key, so I can't go as hard as I want to because he's fulfilling his fiduciary duty to the and it's all right, you know, it's variety. Like if you only have three songs, we had a little discussion in the Discord about Mike's thing about putting out more music, like not just putting out one song. Mm-hmm. And I kind of think, you know, like if you're a band who has a lot of variety, like all your songs are a little bit different sounding, you could put out whatever you want because that's fine to put out 6, 7, 8 songs. But if you're a band who like all your stuff is kind of the same, stick to four. Maybe give me four only. So this is good because these guys are giving three and they're also giving you variety. So you're going to want a little bit more because, you know, he sings on this one. And once again, he uses his talky part wisely. It leads to a very exciting finale, which lands right around 3.5 minutes, a.k.a. the correct maximum length for a hardcore song. You shouldn't go past this. And so, you know, maybe we edit the other since he seems to still be working on the record in some capacity and making changes. Just slice that one up. Use Pro Tools to slice that song up into two or three other little songs. It'll be perfect.
So we get to the third track. It's When the Bow Breaks. Bow, 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 bow. Bow, bow,
bow.
When the bow breaks. More kid shit that I don't care about.
Yep.
I've never been in a bow in my life, so I don't really know how to pronounce it.
It's a tree branch, because When the Bow Breaks is about a baby falling out of a tree.
Okay. There you go. This follows a formula of just doing clean to heavy parts over and over again, and that's all you really need. That's the perfect formula. Why fuck with it? This is Scott's nightmare song, though. There's a lot of talking on this song.
Oh yeah.
This is the most evolution-y song on here, though. Evolution-y song. Mm-hmm. So I prefer it. There is one of the things on their Facebook page that John maintains. Well, he maintained. I don't think they've had a post in a while, but they posted a letter that they they got from Revelation, because they sent their record or demo to Revelation. Mm-hmm. Should have sent it to Evolution, because I think would have had more of a chance with this song. The final rule being broken, I'm not positive on this, but I'm pretty sure he just has straight up reverb on his voice. And I know 1995, the ancient Japanese art of karaoke hasn't taken over the world yet, but that just makes you sound like you're doing karaoke when you just put reverb on your voice. Yeah. At the same time, though, probably better than just talking boy voice, but yeah. It's still like... I can't 100%. It might just actually be delay or something like that, but it definitely sounds a little reverb-y, and that's just but I commend trying something new and just say, hey, just throw a little reverb on there, and because I don't know what karaoke is, so it's fine. They make out even with even less lyrics. They make more out of even less lyrics on this. This is like seven words, this song. Not really. It's like 20 words, and they're just like so much saying it's great. But there are, he's cheating though, because some of these lyrics are not written down in the lyric sheet, so it's a little extra lyricism going on. This is hands down the best song. This would go on the ultimate for 7-Inch Club mixtape if that ever got made. I really love this song. I would hope if they had more music, or they were planning on doing more music, it would be more in this direction, because I think this is exactly what I'd be looking for. I love a full 7-inch of like shit that sounded like this over the other two tracks.
Yeah, I just played it in the other ear real quick to see if I could figure it out, and it's I think it's delay.
Okay.
So that might be allowed because it's kind of an epic sound, you know. To get
that's fine. That's fine. Delay is fine.
Okay. I haven't mentioned it so far, but all the clean channel guitars on this record sound weird. Like the guitars are tuned way down. Or like they're using baritone guitars. They have this kind of bong, bong, bong. Like they're not sweet cleans. They're actually kind of like gnarly sounding. Nothing else on the record sounds downtuned. This isn't like doomy or like sludgy or anything like that. But every clean channel part has this weird clunky clunk. Like it's being played on two thick strings or on like a a semi-hollow, like a Dan Electro, like a weird plank of a guitar or something like that. You know, Wichita Lineman fans will feel me on this one, because the intro of that song is on the don, 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 don. It's what this sounds like. I think the whole song's a dare, because there's so much speaking, and I hate that. But the choruses are like kitchen sink screamo stuff. There's so many layers. There's so much screaming. Every idea that the bassist and guitarist could possibly ever have gets used over two chords. Like they're just, it's a really simple riff, but they are playing everything that they can think to play. And it's good. It's just like, it just keeps happening. It's like a tornado of ebullition-y vibes happening at you. And then they have the fucking balls to end on a spacey, moody, clean channel part. You guys ended your, this is the Citizen Kane clap. You guys ended your fucking record on a spacey, clean channel part. You did it, you sons of bitches. It's pretty good.
Yeah. So there you have it. There's Knotwork. This is shaping up to be one of our shortest episodes ever. In the modern times, at least. So that's what happens when I have COVID brain, I guess.
Yeah.
I didn't really have COVID. I did get the 17th booster shot, though, and that fucking put me out of commission for a couple days. So maybe that's what did it. So I'm sorry for not making this another hour and a half episode. But anyways, to talk about Knotwork and to conclude it, so my usual rating scale is either throw it in the trash, stream it, buy it in the bargain bin, buy it for full price, buy it for collector's prices. We already know this is a quote-unquote collector's prices record. I don't really know. I don't know how much John's getting on eBay for these things, but I see the Discogs prices, and the cheapest one is $16 or $19 or something, and it's probably in some weird land that you would have to pay $48 shipping to get it. So it's an official collector's price record, but I'm not going to pay attention to that. I do think this is kind of... at least cosmetically, is a, you know, pitch perfect kind of snapshot of this time in this time period in the genre of music. And for whatever reason, this seems to be the genre of music that always conducts or always has big prices on big price tags for some reason. I don't know why. I don't get it. I think it's because at some point somebody's going to copy every single type of hardcore strain there ever was, and it's still going. Like there's no stone unturned when it comes to hardcore, like regular hardcore. But as far as emo, I don't think anybody's making shit that sounds like this anymore. Like It's probably because it's just like it's something that I think you would need a certain time period. I don't think you could. There's some bands out there doing it, but I just think this stuff is a little more authentic than 10 million hardcore bands that just kind of sound like the same. So
yeah,
I guess that's why it commands a bigger price. But I don't know. But this one, I kind of get it. It has a crazy pedigree. It's you know, it's kind of obscure, but not like. But it has like kind of names in it and stuff like that. No Eric Wareheim. This is not an Eric Wareheim Philadelphia band. That would have really commanded the price tag on it. Yeah. But no, this is pretty good. So maybe the prices I'm looking at are the real, like the actual cover versions with the glue and shit. So that would make sense why this
hand kissed or hand licked.
the hand licked covers. Now I would understand why this. So maybe these fake ass covers. Don't go for as much money, but either way, for me personally, I think this is like a great snapshot and it has like a great pedigree, as far as like ex members and shit like that. And, it looks good musically. It's kind of all over the place for me. Like I said, the first track is technically okay. There's too much going on. Second track is fine. The third track is really great. So I'm going to put this just for the total package at full price. I don't think I would pay collector's prices for this, but I didn't pay anything for it because John's a great guy and he sent it to me. But yeah, you know, I get it. This whole strain of music, this weird kind of semi-emo, screamo music that always goes for big money, I get it. So it's worth the full price. If you saw this for $5, $6, $7, pick it up.
I think it makes a lot of sense that this band was very local and very short-lived. Because it's very good and very musical, which means that these people were smart enough to know that this genre has like a hard limit. Any rational person would sit down and crank out like 5 or 6 of these super like hand-wringing all or nothing songs, this emotional explosion stuff, and go, I guess that's it. I mean, I think that's all I got to do. I don't think I can do any more of this. You know, you record a second or third album like this, it would be so stupid. It would be so fucking stupid to make any more than about this amount of music. So I award this album, I award this record a perfect score.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's not my favorite. It's not the best, but it's a perfect instance of someone getting it all out of their system and doing it really well. They did it. They did everything they could do and they got out. That never happens, especially not now. So they get 5, like what's a dangerous toy from the 70s? Jarts. Jarts. Or the Popeye balloons that came in a metal tube, the liquid balloons that you could huff.
Oh yeah, man. That's something I wistfully reminisce about like a child. I always wondered, they still make those? Probably not.
They do. I looked it up a while ago and you could still buy it. I mean, it's probably not meant for kids anymore. It's probably just a recreational.
That was a real cool toy because you would twist the cap off and it smelled like toxic chemicals immediately, and you're just like, yeah I'm gonna put this near my mouth.
Yeah, and then all the paper would evaporate off the tube once the fume starts entering the room. Whoops.
That's what you should have sang about not work. You should have sang about those metal balloons.
The Popeye balloons.
Well, there you go. We'll be back next week, back to our regular schedule. I got a record plan, breaking some more rules a little for the record next week, but thank you again, John. If other people are in bands and want to send us their old teen bands from the 90s or 2000s on 7 inches, and you want to pay the $2 or $3 to send it or whatever, let me know. We'll be glad to review it. It'll be a great time. Till then, do you have any last words, Scott?
Just are your cats interested in your injection site?
Oh no, I told Scott on Discord. My girlfriend got the booster shot. And one of my cats was going crazy over the spot where she got it, like the little needle mark. But I don't know. I also didn't bleed or anything, so maybe it had to do with blood. Maybe it was just they were thirsty for blood, and I didn't have any to give them, unfortunately.
Well, my shot's coming up, and I can't take any more attention from the cats. So if they're gonna come after me, I'm just.
I hope you're not a bleeder, because that's I think that's what sets them off. Till next week, fuck Charlie Daniels. Fuck Charlie Daniels. We're born from sugar.
Evil God Judge is gonna make it to the night. She's gonna make it to the night.